From Gimlet Media, this is The Nod. I am Brittany Luce.
And I'm Eric Eddings. So, Brittany.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I have something very important to share with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about someone who I think you know very well.
Okay.
If I say the name Luther Vandross, what comes to mind?
A chair is not a chair, even when there's no one sitting. That could be the wrong lyrics, but I think about a house is not a home.
Yes.
I mean, the voice of an angel.
Yes, one of the greatest singers of all time.
All time.
Also, one of the greatest love singers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Never Too Much.
A thousand kisses from you is never enough.
Power of Love.
Every minute of every hour, feel the power of love.
Superstar.
Don't you remember you told me you love me, baby?
That's anytime anybody sings that song, that's a good song.
It's hard to not name a classic love song by Luther Vandross.
That's true.
So many.
It's impossible.
And if you were listening to the radio in the 80s, 90s, and the early aughts, chances are you heard quite a few Luther love songs. When you think about people who understand love, romance, and emotion, you think about Luther Vandross. His way of communicating those emotions was just unparalleled. And Luther was also, like, beloved by the public. He had this perception as kind of like this almost sweet teddy bear type.
Mm-hmm.
But something most people don't know about Luther is he also had a different side, a less loving side, a side that's more dark, insidious, ruthless even. And today, we're going to talk about that. I'm going to share with you the three reasons why Luther Vandross was secretly a savage.
I am curious to see where this goes.
So, the first reason why Luther Vandross was secretly a savage. His all-too-convincing performance in the movie Meteor Man.
Meteor Man's in town.
Do you remember Meteor Man?
Hell yeah. Robert Townsend is a god. We got him on the show.
Yes. Shout out to Robert Townsend.
Shout out Robert Townsend forever and ever and ever.
So, 1993, Meteor Man. It is a movie starring Robert Townsend. It's also written and directed by Robert Townsend.
He's come to save the world, one neighborhood at a time. Meteor Man.
It is about a teacher, and basically a meteor falls from the sky. He gains powers and draws the ire of drug runners and this massive gang called the Golden Lords.
Yes.
And, like, they all have, like, blonde hair, and they're, like, so menacing. But they're also kind of played up as, like, kind of comedic.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the movie overall is a comedy.
Yeah, I remember being allowed to watch it as a child, like, 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah.
But the only thing that is not fun about the movie is Luther Vandross. So Luther Vandross plays, like, the number two bad guy in the movie.
Yeah.
He's like a hitman. And it's so against type of, like, who you would think Luther Vandross is that it makes you actually rethink who he must have been in real life. I don't think he smiled once in the whole movie.
It's crazy. Luther has a megawatt smile.
But you didn't see it in Meteor Man. In addition to that, he wore these, like, really, like, intense suits. And he was always just, like, had this, like, thousand-yard stare that he was just, like, signaling right at Robert Townsend. I'm gonna mess you up.
Wow. Triumph of casting. It's a triumph of casting.
And, like, there's this one scene where Robert Townsend is in this mall. He's, like, running around with Eddie Griffin, his friend, trying to get away from Luther Vandross. And Luther Vandross is just, like, this, like, lurking force. I remember at the time I was a kid.
Yeah.
I was actually like, this is really intense. And it was because Luther Vandross, this person who we normally think of as this, like, beacon of love, is like, basically, I'm about to mess you up. I'm going to murder you. My point is, this was almost easy for him. You know, being bad, being so convincing at exhibiting evil even, to me, that means he had a little bit of savage already in him.
So you're saying he was just showing his teeth.
Exactly. He was giving us a glimpse, maybe, of his true colors. I don't know. Maybe Luther wasn't a hitman.
I don't think he had the time.
So Luther's ability to convince viewers of Meteor Man, including child Eric, that he was pure evil is my first reason that he was secretly a savage. And that brings me to reason number two. His diva-like antics. And those are best illustrated by his tussle with the legendary group In Vogue. So, the year was 1993. And In Vogue is popping, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I remember. I mean, I used to listen to their albums all of the time. All the time.
Yes. This is like prime, never gonna get it time.
Never gonna get it, never gonna get it, never gonna get it.
Whoa, 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 whoa! Funky Divas. Funky Divas was the album. That shit got me through college, too.
Yes. Free Your Mind.
Yeah. Give It Up, Turn It Loose.
Yeah.
Hello.
All the hits.
He don't want you. He don't need you. It's a good album.
So In Vogue is popping, and Luther Vandross invites him to come on this massive world tour with him. He's like, you know, y'all killing it. Come on tour with me.
Huge opportunity.
Exactly. So sadly, the huge opportunity turned into a huge conflict. Luther and In Vogue kept butting heads on the road. Like, there were reports he wouldn't move his equipment off stage during In Vogue's set, which actually, like, blocked people in the audience from being able to see them. Luther also apparently had curtains put up in common areas to separate him from the group. And then the shit really hit the fan once they got to their tour stop in Miami. So this is what happened in Miami, according to Terry Ellis, one of the original members of In Vogue. There was this hallway. It was the only hallway that, like, passed through all the dressing rooms to get to the stage. Luther Vandross basically came to them and said, look, this is my hallway. You need to go a different way.
What other way? What other way can you go?
What he asked him to do was to exit the stadium, take a car around to the other side of the stadium to go into another entrance. That was what he preferred because he didn't want to risk coming out of his dressing room and just running into them. The sight of them was too much.
I mean, but like, my thing is, okay.
It got so bad to the point where he was like, look, if I see you in that hallway, I'm calling the police.
People had to enforce these rules is the thing. Like somebody who could have been like, you know, I don't know, doing sound check, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Running security had to actually like take time from their actual job just to like navigate this shitty relationship.
There's one other detail that's actually really important to understand. One of the members of In Vogue, Cindy.
Cindy.
At the time, she was 6 months pregnant.
You can't have a pregnant woman moving around that much like that.
I think that's why he wanted her to get in the car. Maybe he thought it was...
that was like the humane solution. You don't have to walk.
You know, just cart you around. You know, make it easier for you.
That's so messed up.
So In Vogue is like, this feels unreasonable.
Yeah.
You know? We're going to go down the hallway. Like, this is the hallway to get to the stage. We got to play a show. We're going to go down the hallway.
Right.
So they go down the hallway.
Oh, God. This is not going to end well.
Luther calls the police and asks them to come out and arrest them for trespassing.
I want to know, first of all, how do you call the police on somebody that you invited on your own damn tour? How do you do that?
It was his hallway.
And then what happens?
So the police come and they like approach In Vogue. They're like, what's going on here? And they ultimately decide, we're not going to arrest you because there's no crime actually committed here. But they were shocked that it came to this. And it actually was still so bad that the police had to escort them to the stage.
Oh, my God.
It was wild.
Luther. So nasty. If you want to treat somebody like they're really nothing, don't invite them on your tour. Do you know what I'm saying? Do the Mariah Carey thing where she's like, I don't know her.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know her.
They don't exist to me.
Right. Or what, I want to say there was an interview that Aretha was doing where she was being asked about different women in music.
When I say the name Adele, what comes to mind?
Mm-hmm. Young singer, good singer.
Alicia Keys.
Young performer,
good writer.
Then it came
to producer. Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift.
Okay, great, great gowns, beautiful gowns.
Beautiful gowns. Like,
which
that's
is
what
like
you do.
Cold,
it's cold. It's like, yes,
blooded.
I've seen her before, but I'm not hearing her. Yeah. Like, that's what you do. And see, this is my thing about Luther. Savage, I think, is the correct word. He is a savage because he's out here raising hell and running amok without that diva-esque finesse. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he and cut straight to the point. He cut to the police.
He cut to the police, which, like, I mean, it's levels to that just to be a black man not in your house.
Yeah.
Being like, these people who I invited here who are actually clear with security and on the billboard and who are performing on stage, you have to get them out because I don't like them. Like, what point do you reach as a black man where you're just about to be calling the police on people that you don't like?
Yeah.
What?
I haven't gotten there yet.
Luther.
Yeah. So Luther wanting his demands followed so badly that he called the popo, the police, is reason two that Luther Vandross was secretly a savage.
Who knew? I mean, Cindy knew.
Yeah, and she'd never forget. Cindy
from Vogue, she knew she'd never forget that. Wow.
So this is the final reason, three reasons why.
Okay.
So the third reason why Luther Vandross was secretly a savage, he went toe-to-toe with a legend. And I'm glad you brought up Aretha, because she's actually the legend that Luther so boldly clashed with. Everybody knows Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, is a spirited woman.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't play. She's not known to
play. No.
She does not suffer fools.
No.
And, you know, at times she has been described as somewhat challenging to work with.
Okay.
Maybe just demanding.
Yeah.
Who knows? But at this point in her career, in 1982, Aretha was actually in need of a bit of a comeback. And so she was going to be working with Luther Vandross, who was like fire hot at this particular point.
Yeah. Oh, you know? Yeah. He was just taking off in the early 80s.
Exactly. And her song with him was supposed to be her like comeback hit. You know, this was supposed to put Aretha back on top where she's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm sorry, I'm just shaking my head because I'm like, this is not starting off in a good place.
So they get into the studio, and here's what happened. And this is according to an account Luther himself gave to Aretha's biographer, David Ritz, in his book, Respect. So Luther's like crafting this song, what will eventually become Jump to It. You know Jump to It?
Yeah.
Jump to It. And he's working on the intro. He wants to have this, like, long building intro that, like, leads up to eventually Aretha coming in and killing it, you know?
Yeah.
But Aretha is like, no. I know my audience. They don't want to go that long without hearing my voice. And Luther's like, no, just, like, roll with me. Look, I understand. I know who you are. I know your caliber. I know your pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
But trust me. You know what I'm saying? Like, just roll with it. And Aretha's basically like, no. They need to hear me fast, in a hurry.
Oh, my God.
So he's like, no, I think we need to do it this way. They're at a little bit of an impasse. She leans to him and she goes, look, honey. Who has the most hits in this room? Luther's like, I can't argue with that.
No.
You have the most hits. But who's the one with the latest hit? And Aretha Franklin was shook. She could not believe that he said that to her face. Queen of Soul. She didn't even know what to say. She literally got up and left the studio.
I can't believe that he lived after that.
Right?
I can't believe he made it all the way to the 2000s, personally, because, I just can't even imagine.
Imagine.
I can't imagine.
Shaping your mouth.
To even look at, I can't even imagine just even looking at Aretha Franklin and being like, I have the latest anything. Because at the very end of the day, she has been at this at that point in time, not even now, at that point in time, she had been at this for decades.
Yes.
So to even open up my mouth to just be like, I have the latest hit, that's deep. It takes some type of fucking gumption to do that. Because, I mean, personally, I would never dream of such disrespect.
I just don't have it in me.
No. Also, like, why risk your life?
Exactly. You know, I want to live. I got goals.
He's got hits. Why risk your life?
Only a savage would do that.
Yeah, obviously.
As for who ultimately won, there are actually two versions of Jump to It. There is the single, which I play for you now.
Mm-hmm.
You hear Aretha real quick.
Yeah, I'm kind of in a hurry. Uh-huh. Here's the reason why.
Boom. She's in there singing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
This is a bop, though. It still is. Slaps.
It is.
But there's another version. And I'll play that for you right now.
Jump, jump, jump to it. Jump, jump, jump to it. Jump, jump, jump to it.
Aretha doesn't come in for another minute and a half.
That's so fucking rude, man. That is so rude and spiteful.
But he did it. Because he's a savage.
This just blows my mind that he even, like, I have to listen to another minute and a half of that to be able to hear just like a peep of Aretha.
He's like, I wanted it a certain way, and it will be that way.
Reminds me of somebody else I know.
I mean, there's a reason why I look up to Luther.
Keep it moving.
And so, in conclusion, in summation, because of his convincing role in Meteor Man, his demanding nature with En Vogue, and his audacity to go head-to-head with a legend like Aretha Franklin, Luther Vandross was secretly a savage.
Wow. Well, maybe secretly does, but obviously, a few people.
It was out. It was out.
The cat was out of the bag. I have to say, I am slightly disappointed at some of his, like, I wish he would have operated with a little bit more restraint as far as his takedowns. But I mean, a minor criticism.
Yes.
I mean,
for a career that is
right.
So big.
Yes. You know, obviously, I'm like Luther forever.
Yeah.
You know this. I cry to Luther at least like 6 times a year. And his career obviously was phenomenal.
Yes. This doesn't besmirch who Luther is.
No. I imagine that some of this behavior contributed to his stardom.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, some of this falls under the category of business acumen when you work in the music
exactly.
industry. Do you know what I'm saying?
It's a skill.
It's a skill.
So, yes, exactly to your point. I think Luther is still one of the greatest singers of all time. Still this beacon of love.
Yeah.
Still knows how to deliver a love song better than most. But the next time you think about the jolly, loving image of Luther Vandross, keep in mind the three reasons why he was secretly a savage.
After the break, I am going to confess something to Eric that literally scares me to death. And it's something that I have a lot of questions about.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back.
So, Eric, I want to be serious for a second.
Serious? You?
I want to be serious.
Okay, let's do it.
I wanted to share something with you today.
Mm-hmm.
Something that maybe you didn't know about me. So, I have actually always wanted to be cremated.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, why? Do you not want to be cremated?
To be honest, I haven't thought about it.
It's not going to hurt. When they incinerate you, it's not going to hurt if that's an upside for you.
That's true. I think and worry about death often.
Me too.
But to be honest, I never really have considered what I want to have happen to my physical body after I die.
Really?
But yeah, that's really interesting. But what makes you feel confident about cremation?
Well, okay, so As you know, I have pretty curly hair. It's pretty curly and also pretty and curly.
I just have to point out, that was not the reply that I was expecting to that question.
I'm building towards something. Okay. Just relax, relax. So the thing is that, like, something I noticed about myself a couple years ago, it's just, like, my hair had just gotten to, like, a really good place. Like, you know, I have a really good stylist. Mm-hmm. As you know, I talk to her all the time. You know,
incessantly.
She gets it, though. I have good highlights. Just, like, everything with my natural hair right now in my life is, like, on point, shiny, healthy, great. To reach a point where you feel comfort and just at peace with one's hair, mm-hmm. as a Black woman, that's peak achievement for me.
It's like self-actualization.
Yes, it is literally. I look at my hair and I think I'm self-actualized. You know what I'm saying? I think a lot of Black women can relate to that. And the thing that I think about, though, is that, like, you know, when I meet that, you know, my final day, mm-hmm. when Jesus says, come on home, you know what I mean? The chariot swings low and picks me up. I think about, like, what I'm going to look like in the casket.
Yes.
And I noticed that, like, on a particularly good hair days, I'm like, I don't want a court death. But today, it wouldn't be a bad day if you had to pick it. Do you know what I mean? Where I'm like, my hair is so on point. I'm like, if this is the day that this is the last one, lay me down, because this is it.
That I can't say.
Provided nothing happened to my face. Basically, I want to get cremated so that I don't have to worry about anyone messing up my natural hair.
I can't say that I have had that thought before. But,
well, I mean, how could you ever understand? Bald. How could you ever understand?
Well, you know, I mean, I have good beard days. Yeah. Some days.
No empathy, though. But go ahead.
But no, I mean, I haven't necessarily had that same feeling before. But I mean, now that you point it out, I mean, it does kind of make sense.
I know you don't know what I do with my hair. Right. I'm going to assume that you don't know what I do with my hair.
Willfully ignorant. Is the...
Very cute. That's very cute. So, ideally, I've done some sort of, like,
oil prep.
Basically put oil in my hair, slept in it overnight just to try to, like, trap some moisture in
there. I get in the shower, mm-hmm. and then I put, like, a shit ton of conditioner in it, like, 2 cups of it.
And I'm just, like, I detangle it really carefully with my fingers.
And, like, I do one side, then the other side, then the whole thing, and I form my curl.
And then I, like, make sure that the style is basically set.
I rinse
it. And then I get out of the shower. I flip my head over back into the bathtub. I put, like, a specific microfiber towel.
I do not, like, rub on my head with the towel. None of that. I just want to eliminate.
So I have the oil, cream-based moisturizer, and then gel that I use on my edges, my ends, and, like, the top of my hair to define my curls. That's the quick version.
I couldn't repeat back to you what you just said to me. Like, I literally couldn't do it.
So you see why I kind of have anxiety about this.
Yeah, I mean,
and why I want to be cremated.
Strangely enough, this tracks.
So, yeah, so I've always had this, like, lingering anxiety about what happens to your hair after you die. I do have a cousin that just finished mortuary school.
Oh, wow.
So I called him the other day to see if he could give me a sense of, you know, what happens when you're, you know, preparing a body for burial. And, like, specifically, what happens to your hair?
Strange enough, I'm actually very interested in this conversation.
You would be invested in my end. You would be invested in my end. But no, this is something that's worth bringing up to my cousin and getting an idea from him. You know what I'm saying? Like, just coming to him and being like, look, I have questions.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. So first, if you could just tell me your name.
Okay, my name is Kalos Calamese.
And you are a client service advisor at a funeral home.
And I'm your cousin.
You are my cousin. So what drew you to this? Like, why do you want to be the person to walk a family through that period?
2 years ago, I lost my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Being with her through the whole process of her being sick and her health declining,
mm-hmm.
when she passed, I took the task on of nobody could touch her hair. So I went in and did my grandmother's hair. And I made it through making her look beautiful, making sure she was dressed properly, and the whole shebang for her services. And the fact that I was able to make it through taking care of the person who raised me it actually let me know if I can handle her, I can handle anything that came my way in regards to this industry. And actually working with the families in their time of sorrow, it feels good to take care of that family to make sure that their loved one looks as good as possible, because your goal is to for one, make the family happy, and to, for two, give their loved one a dignified service.
So I got some questions for you. Can you kind of just explain to me the basics of what it is that you do? Let's say somebody like me comes into a funeral home, you know, they've passed away, they're a decedent at this point. You say you have to prepare the body. Like, what does that mean? What happens?
We have to drain the body of the blood, and then we replace the blood with the embalming fluid.
Uh-huh.
Through the whole embalming process, we start the bathing process. So we're washing the body with soaps, and we're massaging the body towards the heart, mm-hmm. to move the embalming fluid through the body. Every limb gets a massage to move the fluid through.
Wow.
I mean, you're getting a bath before embalming starts. Uh-huh. You're getting a bath through embalming, and you're getting a bath after embalming.
What is happening at this stage, like the stage where you're like preparing the body? What's happening to the hair at this point?
Well, the hair gets washed, of course, because of the chemicals that we use.
I thought that I guess, obviously I didn't know a lot about this. I thought that when you died that I never thought that my hair would get washed again. I thought that the hair stays dry and you do all this stuff to the body, and then they just work on the hair on its own. I had no idea that your hair, so everybody who comes in gets their hair washed.
Yes, you get your hair washed a ton of times. The hair is washed, conditioned, and dried. We comb through the hair to ensure there's no debris or anything in the hair to get the hair as clean as possible. And at that point, we're halted until we are told by the family what they want us to do with the hair.
So this is where I have another question. So when I do my hair, there's, you know, I have a little method that I use, and I'm detangling my hair with my fingers in the shower and a way that I tip my head over to make it all work. And then I have a certain order of products. So I use some oil, and then I have a cream, and then I have another gel. And then I'm kind of scrunching it and pulling it, you know, styling it. How do you find out what works with a decedent's hair?
I always ask, was there a certain kind of product? Because I've had a family who mom had real silky, wavy hair, and you couldn't use a certain type of grease. So the family brought in the products that we were to use on the hair.
Uh-huh.
If there's a special order or anything, we get everything detailed out so that when we start the process, we look at the photo that we're provided,
mm-hmm.
as well as the steps that are given to us in regards to how to make the loved one's hair look like it normally looks. We have a variety of hair that we come across. We have some with wigs, some with natural hair, and then some where they like the press and curl type do. Then we do allow families to have their stylist who normally did their loved hair come in to do the hair, or they can do the hair themselves.
Wait. So if I wanted to, I could have my hairstylist or a family member or somebody else that I trust come in and do my hair?
Yes.
So you do the hair, you do the makeup. Who says, okay, who gives approval?
The next of kin actually gets the approval. So the family members who we've sat with for the arrangement,
mm-hmm.
we do what we call a first viewing.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting with families, I see a lot of people who are guessing as to what their mother or father or their sister or brother may have wanted. Even parents guessing what their children would have wanted. So being able to have the talk while you're living is not a bad thing. It doesn't mean you're going to die tomorrow. It just means that you're one step closer to preparing your family for what it is that you may want in the event that you pass before they pass.
Mm. So it wouldn't be a bad idea for maybe me to start like a document.
Yeah, it's not a document.
Some photos, reference photos, maybe some YouTube videos, tutorials on how to do my hair, product suggestions, things like that.
Yeah.
This actually made me feel a lot better. I can't lie. Kalos, this was great. You were great. All right, love you. Thank you so much.
All right, love you too.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
You know, I have never thought about that before, but if you had questions about it, Brittany, I'm sure a bunch of other people did too. So hopefully you have just performed a very valuable public service.
Every time I appear on this show, it is a valuable public service. But yes, I will say that now, you know, that I know that I can start putting together a plan for my hair after I'm gone,
mm-hmm.
you know, after my soul leaves my body.
I don't have to wonder anymore if every good hair day I have is going to be the day. The Knot is produced by me, Brittany Luce, with Eric Eddings, Kate Parkinson Morgan, and Emmanuel Berry, with production assistance from Wallace Mack. Our senior producer is Sarah Abdurrahman.
We are edited by Annie Rose Strasser. Engineering from Cedric Wilson. Fact-checking by Max Gibson. Our theme music is by Khalid B. Additional music in the show by Talkstar and Black Rose.